Welcome to More to Come, PW Comic World's weekly podcast on graphic novel and comics publishing. Recorded, as always, hither and yon through the through Gotham. That would be New York City. I'm Calvin Reed, a senior news editor, Publishers Weekly, editor of PW Comics World, and editor of The Fanatic, PW's twice-a-month comics and pop culture newsletter. Check us out online at publishersweekly.com/comics.
And I'm Heidi McDonald. I'm the editor-in-chief of The Beat at comicsbeat.com, and you can find us on Twitter at PW Comics World.
And I'm Kate Fitzsimmons. I'm the podcast producer, and you can find us online on Tumblr at pwcomicsworld.tumblr.com.
Don't forget, you can subscribe to More to Come on the Apple Podcast app, and on Google Podcasts, and on Stitcher, and on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/pwcomicsworld.
Yes, make sure you subscribe, and also don't forget to leave us a rating or a note or a numerical judgment of how you like this podcast or anything. Give us some feedback on the platform of your choice, because we love to hear from our listeners. You can even like at us on Twitter if you want. That's crazy, but you can do it. We'd love to hear it.
Give us a digital pat on the back, or, you know, perhaps the opposite, okay? Anyway, this week on More to Come, Eisner nominations. Okay. All right. Tapas Media isn't bite-sized anymore. Lots of activities to talk about. Netflix Geek Week. And after lockdown, librarians embrace the graphic novel surge.
And also on our story list, the return of Fables with some baggage.
Oh, yes, yes. How did I leave that out?
Well, my bad. Listen, you guys, we have so much to talk about this week. I'm almost like, Eisner nominations. Who wants to talk about yesterday's news? But they are one of the biggest stories of the year in comics, and they are out, and there's a lot of them. They even added a category this year.
Yes, they did. I saw that. Graphic memoir. I mean, you know, I've had a kind of I've had a little pet peeve, because I really hate the name of the reality-based category. I mean, I just think it should be nonfiction, but there you go. But that's fine. I think this is a very positive account, because really, memoir, it seems to me, is kind of we're in an incredible renaissance of I guess autobiographical comics.
Memoir comics are huge.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting, because that was always kind of a key indie comics category, the autobiographical work. Mm-hmm. But really, it's kind of evolved into an even more powerful.
Yes. Absolutely. And the nominees for Best Graphic Memoir are Banned Book Club, a book we talked about here quite a bit, by Kim Hyun-suk, Ron Estrada, and Ko Hyung-ju. Dancing After 10, a graphic memoir by Vivian Chong and Georgia Weber. Ginseng Roots by Craig Thompson. I did not know that was a memoir, but okay. I Don't Know How to Give Birth by Ayami Kazama, translated by Julie Gonowich. And The Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist by Adrian Chomine, something we've talked about. And also When Stars Are Scattered by Victoria Jameson and Omar Mora.
Yes. So, I haven't read that, but boy, it's supposed to be great.
Yeah, it is. Well, that's exactly right. Every year there are, you know, it just seems like there's some memoir that just, you know, captures our imagination and just really grabs people. And then the best reality-based work, Big Black, Stand at Attica.
You mean nonfiction?
Yeah. Well, I know. And you know what? We should really shame them, although I think they're unshameable. Dragon Hoops. Now, how is Dragon Hoops not a memoir?
It essentially is a memoir. I can see where it could be seen as also the nonfiction account of a year in the game, and with him, since he's a character in it.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, it's not really just about him.
Because it isn't just about him. And in some ways, it's the least of it is about him, but he's just a recurring character, since he breaks down so many other people and he becomes a kind of part of the team. So.
Right. Well, other books, Invisible Differences, A Story of Asperger's Adulting and Living a Life in Full Color by Madame Carolyn and Julie Dashes. Kent State, Four Dead in Ohio by Durf Backdurf. Paying the Land by Joe Sacco. And Year of the Rabbit by Jan Wiazna, translated by Helga Dasher. So,
Wonderful
I mean, that's
books.
Just, just two categories. I mean, we would take the whole podcast to read them all. But the big winners this year were Image and Fantagraphics. They had double digits. And then, of course, Gene Yang. He got five nominations.
For Dragon
Hoops and two for Superman Smashes the Clan.
Mm-hmm. He's having a good year, not just a good year for nominations, but quite frankly, a good year for work.
Well, he was the Comics Industry Person of the Year last year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's the man. Even for Yang, who has a great back catalog, this was a very good year.
Yeah,
oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, both the books. I mean, you know, Superman Smashes the Clan also is also a kind of really important work, too. Yeah, it's just great. And what, six creators were nominated. You got three noms each?
Yes. Ed Brubaker, Matt Fraction, Jeff Lemire, Adrian Tomine, James Tynion IV, and Chip Zdarsky. Now, everyone that I've just mentioned is a man. Are male identifying, and that was really the big wrap on this year's. There was very few. I think there was only like three women nominated in the individual categories, which is kind of a shocker because
that's
it just seems weird.
Bizarre.
But I mean,
there have been years where this was definitely not the case.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I think you definitely don't need to, you know, argue that the people I just named had great years, you know, but you know, they're all also they're white men except for Adrian and Gene, I'll be honest. And you know, I think there were some people who wondered why Ram V, he had a really great year. He wasn't nominated. I was actually a little surprised. Mm. I was surprised that The Magic Fish by Trung Lee it was nominated for Best Writer Artist, but it didn't get nominated for Best Book for Younger Readers. You know, that book just smashed all the best lists last year.
Yeah.
But you know, hey, Horses for Courses, Eisners for Wisners. I don't know.
You know.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I mean, a cynical part of me that honestly doesn't know who was on the Eisner Committee this year does kind of wonder who had time on their hands to, you know, work on an Eisner committee and who was busy trying to take care of business during a pandemic, and if that affected who had the time to be on the panel and you know, contribute and nominate stuff.
I mean, I doubt that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just every year is a complete, different mix of people. It's like a different recipe. It's not the same. So everybody's
My experience on the Eisner is that everyone is really takes this as a serious responsibility and works like a dog to read material that maybe they didn't get a chance to read as best they can. I mean, there's so much to read. As I remember from when I was doing it, there's no way you can read everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But damn it, everybody I saw, including myself, was trying their best.
Yeah, and you'll find that this list is totally like past lists. Like, I mean, I think the feeling is to not honor as many different works as possible, you know? I mean, that's why instead of, like, you know, if you look at the old Eisner ones, it would be like, you know, if people liked Hellboy, then that year Mike Mignola would get nominated in every category, you know, best artist, best writer, best cover artist, you know? Whereas this year, they really seem to make a effort to, like, split it up as much as possible, so.
You know, I did it so long ago, I'm wondering, I mean, before the pandemic hit, were they still flying everybody out to San Diego to do it?
Well, they didn't last year.
I
don't know how they did it this year. Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely, of course.
Yeah.
No, that's part of the whole thing is they get the judges in the same room.
Did you go there? Yeah. No, I'm sure it didn't happen last year. So I'm curious, did they give everybody digital aspect, access? I mean, it must have been some of that because you couldn't send these books to everybody. I mean, part of the thing is that, you know, you're like locked in a room with that's like a crazy library of everything available. So I assume they must have offered digital access to most of the books. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Just curious at the process now. All right, Eisner noms.
I think, you know, you can go look at the list. I mean, I think, like, the main news is just
– Yeah.
You know, Gene Yang had a hellacious year, and You know, like they didn't pick a lot of women this year, and there was, or you know, it was mostly white men nominated this year. So that's a little step backwards, but you know, it's so dependent on the jury year by year. And yeah. You know, there was some pointed moments, but yeah, the Eisners, yes.
Yeah. All right.
So, you know, as like, I mean, what I said with the Eisners don't seem like the number one thing. I mean, some weeks were just like, oh, there's no news. Well, you know what? The comic book industry is coming out of quarantine, let me tell you, because yes, they, yeah. There is so much going on. Like I think last Thursday, I just joked to my team that, you know, everyone had decided to send out all their PR on the same hour, independently. And then I said, you know, Friday we were all so exhausted. I said, you watch at 5 o'clock. There's going to be a big story. And sure enough, a big story did break at 5 o'clock. But one of the things, you know, we talked about it earlier was that Kakao, which is a gigantic Korean tech company, was looking yes. to buy Tapas. And, that indeed took place. That took place like right after we discussed it, but it kind of flew under the radar. I didn't find anybody reporting on this news actually, which is interesting. They also bought Radish. Kakao is investing the studio's yes. strength in its fast-growing global webtoons and web novel business. Tapas is blah, blah, blah. With this transaction, they bought Tapas for an estimated $510 million. Kakao Entertainment obtains a 100% stake in Tapas. So half a billion dollars. That's a pretty good valuation for Tapas,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'd say so, too.
And then promptly... Tapas just started sending, you know,
hiring everybody.
Yeah. So they announced that they were hiring, a media guy, you know, like a studio guy to kind of oversee their development of their IP into other media as Kevin Nicholas. And then, lo and behold, Alex Carr, formerly of DC, formerly of Jet City Comics, the Amazon imprint, he was hired as, kind of director of publishing. It sounds like he'll liaise with publishers or something. He's a little, you know, his portfolio sounded a little vague, but he's a great guy to have around. He worked at DC and Amazon, so that's good enough for me. And then I think last time we got together, we mentioned that Jamie Rich had left yes. DC, and everybody was speculating about where he's going. Now, I kept hearing Tapas, but nobody could confirm it. And guess what? It was yeah. confirmed that he's going to Tapas as editor-in-chief. All under Michelle Wells, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
yes, indeed.
So, what do you think is happening?
Well,
money. Money is happening. And probably, I mean, I would be very interested to see what they have in the works. It smells like they've got a plan. And I'm very interested to learn what it is.
Well, Tapas Media and Webtoon, you know, really two powerful entities on the vertical scroll mobile comics situation or marketplace. I mean, they've been building up an incredible following really for several years now. Both of these platforms are also looking at the print world and of course the TV and movie adaptation world as well. This is a friend of the show, Rob Salkowitz, wrote about it for Publishers Weekly when he looked at both of these platforms and a number of platforms in the area. So this is a natural progression. They're really building well. They're obviously also attracting investors.
Investors. I mean, they just got gobbled up.
Well, they've got 100%. Going. And certainly Webtoon is actually it was even an even stronger position than Tapas before this acquisition. I just think that they've really got a critical audience that they've identified that want comics done in a certain kind of way, and now's the time to exploit it in an even broader fashion. And by broader fashion, I really do mean in the print world.
Well,
so I just think we're going to see books really come out of both of these platforms.
Yes.
And a lot of
– Well, I mean, you really don't hire someone like Jamie S. Rich if you're
right.
not planning to publish. Now, I think what's interesting about the hiring of Jamie is that, you know, prior to DC, he was the editor-in-chief at Oni. And, you know, he's a creator himself. He did this book, Lady Killer, with Joel Jones. That's actually coming to Netflix. might be coming to Hulu. I forget which streaming platform. But anyway, it's being turned into a TV show or a streaming show. But Jamie was really known for – I didn't write this, but I'll say it on the podcast. He's kind of known for the emo content that they had at Oni. You know, a lot of it was very female-friendly, very a young adult, and you know, a lot about feelings, romance, identity, all that stuff.
And a lot of humor too.
Yeah, but I mean, Jamie himself was really known as having a bit of a soft touch, I'll say that. And you know, guess what? That's exactly what Tapas is aimed at. You know, we know that the readership of both all the, you know, both these platforms is mostly teenaged girls, overwhelmingly, and that he's the perfect fit. He's the perfect fit if you are trying to bring mainstream people into Tapas. So, I mean, that's it. You also do not hire Michelle Wells, Alex Carr, and J.B. Rich, basically the entire editorial staff of DC Comics, unless you're trying to reach mainstream creators.
And the people that actually really created DC's graphic novel line that's doing so well now. They really kind of brought DC well into the book trade. I mean, they were always there, but their YA stuff and middle grade stuff, they really established that. You know, if I may jump in very quickly, also, I think Jamie oversaw, when he was at DC, Vertigo, among other things.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
He did. And he oversaw the launch of Young Animal with Gerard Way, you know, pop star turned comics editor. So, once again, I interviewed both of them, and in the most recent, obviously in the press release about his new job now at Tapas, he talks about the importance of indie comics to his whole aesthetic and what he's going. So he's the perfect guy to oversee editorial at Tapas right now. When they're really trying to look into a market that isn't necessarily looking for the superhero genre that, you know, we all love so well.
Well, I would direct you to, you know, an interview I did with Tom Akel, who used to be the editorial director of Webtoon, and, you know, now he does Rocket Ship, which, by the way, just teamed up with Tapas to do print. So I just got that PR, and I didn't have a chance to write it up. So, so they're teaming up. Everybody's teaming up. You know, Tom had so much smart stuff to say about everybody trying to be Webtoons, you know, or be on these platforms. Because as we know, you know, traditional comics publishers are trying to be on these platforms, and you know, they got to know their audience. You know, certainly Batman, with all the things we've learned about him this week, which I won't go into on a family podcast, okay, he's not going to be very popular with the ladies. That's all I'll say.
Well, it depends on which writer is writing him and who the editor is. Listeners, you cannot even imagine how much I'm rolling my eyes.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, I'll also just throw Black Sands Entertainment into this mix here as a new company that's in the same vertical scroll category. Black Sands Publishing launched their comics app. They're way behind the others, but he's really pitching it as a platform for Black creators to reach a Black audience. And he's really got a pretty hilarious and bombastic social media presence. So,
well,
Emmanuel, the guy who
I mean, the mobile comics platform is just here to stay. I mean, yes, and how far it will come to replace print comics, or, you know, like, I just think it's parallel. I think it's a parallel.
Yes, I agree. Audience. I think it's going to be parallel.
And but, you know, when you have again, if Amazon or Apple, which are sort of analogous companies to Kakao, because it's a huge, you know, it owns some kind of chat app that's huge. It's like some kind of social media company. And it also has gaming. And it also has web comics. So it does everything. But it's like if Facebook or Apple or, you know, Amazon had bought a web comics platform for $500 million, everyone would be talking about it, you know? So this is big news.
Well, I think it's interesting. I do think these Korean platforms have been they kind of. I mean, if platforms so popular can be said to be operating under the radar, it seems to me they are to a certain extent. Even though obviously they have these burgeoning audiences that really want their comics. I mean, really millions of viewers. So yeah. I just think people are missing out on what's going on now, and now they're really ready to shine.
Yeah, well, it's just under the radar of, you know, the people who are obsessed with the direct market, which we often are here, to be fair.
So we
get it. Yeah. So but we're not, you know, we're also, you know, we could whether
we come up for air occasionally.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, let me segue here. You know, obviously much more to come, but there were so many people coming and going and things. So I don't even know really, you know, AWA, Artists, Writers and Artisans, which is the company led by Bill Gemmis and Axel Alonso. And then there's a money guy and I forget what his name is. But anyway, they just hired a president for their studio, much like Tapas did who will, you know, develop their IP. But the story comes first. They are not just making comics to be turned into movies. The story must come first.
The story, that's it.
They told me that. But anyway, this guy's name is Zach Studen. And he was at, you know, he did all sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, look, you can't have a comic startup without having a Hollywood media guy.
Yes, you can. And I mean, good for them. You know, as we'll get to it in a minute, as we go down our story list, there's no shortage of development of, comics properties for media. So yeah, hire a guy to specialize in it. So I guess maybe, okay. So then, Well, let me just throw this in here because there were so many couple of stories. Remember I said there was a big story on Friday afternoon. Shocker. That this email came out that said Oni Studios and Sarah Gatos have agreed to part ways. Now, Sarah was the editor-in-chief of Oni. And, you know, it's like we wish her well in her future endeavors. And, you know, my DMs lit up with, like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. I honestly have no idea what's going on. This just shocked me.
Now, this is – I mean, obviously, Alex Segura has joined the company.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know if that means anything or not, but
So, you know, Sarah was immensely popular among creators, and she did tweet because, I mean, obviously her DMs were blowing up, but she did tweet, guys, you know, nothing to say except it was mutual.
Sure.
Now, I will say this, and I actually probably signed the same kind of NDA that Sarah did, so probably I shouldn't say any more than what I'm about to say, but you know, Oni is owned by Lionforge, Polarity, and, you know, they're moving swiftly into animation. The owners are very much involved in getting their animation studio off the ground. They have partnerships with China and all this stuff. So, anyway, I'll just point that out.
All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, shall we talk about Zoop?
Well, let me just do this other one first.
Oh, sorry. Go right ahead.
Because we're talking about Zoop, but before then, there was also the story in Business Insider that shook everyone. Not all technologies are welcome in comics. So Substack, as you know, it's this newsletter company, but they've been making, you know, they have tons. They have like millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of venture capital. And they announced that they are investigating comics, and they hired Nick Spencer, of all people. Now,
something you should know about Substack. Now, I don't want to tar everyone who uses Substack with the same brush, because a wide, wide, wide variety of people use Substack. But Substack is also known for being the place that people who get fired from media publications go for an easy, quick, new audience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like Nick Spencer's career has not done quite as well since the Nazi Captain America debacle. So make of that what you will.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I mean, look, From a business standpoint, I certainly understand why you would reach out to people like Andrew Sullivan. He has a huge following. So if you're trying to build a platform, I'm not saying I would do it. I'm just saying from a business standpoint, I understood why they did it. But, you know, with Nick Spencer, that you kind of had to reach. I mean, trust me, no one was sitting around. And I'm one of those people who doesn't even think Hail Hydra was that bad. But if you were sitting around saying, say, who could launch our comics initiative, like Gary.
Why would you choose that
Nick
guy?
Nick Spencer would not have been on the
yeah,
list.
Yeah, well.
Unless you were like, hey, let's get that guy who was canceled.
That'll really help out brand.
I don't know that it's ideological. My sneaking business suspicion is that someone said, you know, I bet canceled people mean we can get good talent cheap. You know, like we can snap up people no one else will take.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's certainly not all or even most people on Substack, but there's no shortage of them. And forgive me, but Nick Spencer whiffs to me of the exact flavor of mildly canceled, but not wildly toxic.
Yes.
The Substack tends to go after.
Yep.
Just the very slightly canceled.
Yes.
well, let's be fair, because I mean, there are also academics, historians alike on there who are on there because for their expertise, and they've kind of discovered an audience that they didn't think they have. No, but without a doubt, I mean, I'm actually curious about a guy. I don't know if you guys listen to the On the Media podcast, but I do. And, you know, Bob Garner, you know, has basically been canceled. Sounds like he went over the top, but he's an extraordinary journalist. I've listened to him for years. You know, I don't really subscribe to Substack, but you know what? I'm curious as to what he's going to be doing now. Supposedly, he's going to Substack, so we'll see.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, when I say someone's very slightly canceled, I don't necessarily mean that I, Kate Fitzsimmons, think that no one should ever read their stuff again. I say very slightly canceled, advisedly. I'm just saying people who have been in the middle of a Twitter brouhaha and have found themselves in need of money is a very common category on Substack. But also, as Calvin says, and as I point out, yes, many, many people who do not fit in that category are also on Substack. There are many fine things there. And that doesn't mean that I would discount anyone who's not named Nick Spencer who happens to use Substack for their comics. I mean, it could be a very interesting place to put comics.
Well, I mean, a company like Substack wouldn't have had anything to do with comics in the past, but comics are so hot, they have to. But they did, you know, not only did they raise some eyebrows with the Spencer hire, but they raised eyebrows with the kind of the way the owner of Substack was talking in this piece, because he was talking about, yeah, we're looking to bring writers. And, of course, Twitter went nuts with like, well, you know, if you're going to just make comics with writers, they're not going to be very good comics.
Very interesting.
So, yeah. So, you know, they got off on the wrong foot. But, hey, more money.
Well, I could be wrong, but I think what that meant is we're going to snap up whatever big-ish name writers we can, and then we can just hire whatever artist. Artists are interchangeable.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Because,
I'm a
book person, but even though I tend to be a little writer-centric in which comics I fall in love with, there's no question of the vast importance of the artist. Artists are not interchangeable. I do not mean that at all.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I'm just saying, it's like the good artists are busy for years now, so, you know, better get in on there. You know, and listen, Nick Spencer knows a lot of people in comics, so I'm not saying he's unqualified at all, but, you know, interesting. But that's not even the only startup. Calvin, you got Zoop. What's up with Zoop?
Well, Zoop is let's zoom into it and see what up. Yeah. Well, I mean, Zoop is actually bringing a figure back that we've actually kind of heard about, before, Jordan Plosky. I think you've met Jordan, right?
Yeah, I interviewed him for the podcast.
Of course. He launched Comic Blitz. He was on this he's been on the podcast at least once. I think I interviewed him when he first launched Comic Blitz, which was a comic subscription, a platform, to basically kind of brought in indie, a number of independent comics publishers. I mean, he had Valiant, Dynamite. And he launched it, when was it, about 2016 or so? And 2015. And in 2018, sold it to Cinedigm, an entertainment platform. So he's come back now, interesting, and this is kind of crowdfunding plus. He's kind of created a crowdfunder that basically offers you a tiered a suite of services. Unlike, you know, if we're looking at Kickstarter as kind of the basic program, all or nothing, you know, goals, if you get it, you know, if you get your goal, you get it. If not, you don't. But basically, you have to learn how to do what they do and do it yourself, even though now, of course, there are some third parties that will help you take over certain functions, fulfillment and the like. But what they're offering is soup to nuts menu of crowdfunding services, or you can go with the no frills category. And what they do is they charge you an escalating percentage depending on the service that you want. So if you want to do no frills, it's 5% of whatever your goal is. And I think that's what Kickstarter charges. Now, if you'd like pledge management, and I suppose we could talk a great deal about whatever that is, but, you know, putting on a Kickstarter and they're really putting on a really successful Kickstarter, you don't do it on a whim. It does take planning. It does take some knowledge, and you certainly should do some discussion beforehand with someone who's done one, or use you know, whatever service. I know Kickstarter does through Oriana Leckard, who's running the show for comics and publishing over there. They've got people there to kind of give you a hand, give you advice. But what Zoop is offering and what Jordan is offering are really professional. Third-party vendors that they've negotiated to work in advance, and they've got a fee set. So you can get that. You can get fulfillment. They've got warehousing. And they have another very interesting concept of what they're doing is they're adding an e-commerce function to it. So essentially, some of us, hey, a great panel goes up, and we missed the deadline. You're out of luck. You can't really do it. What they plan to do is offer an e-commerce thing. So if you missed the donation period but still want the book or the merchandise, you'll be able to buy it. So in
that's
a certain
good.
Way.
That's yes. a great. That's great. That's
so
great. I mean, Indiegogo offers a little bit of that fulfillment afterwards, but they don't have the, you know, grab and go for the rewards.
Yeah, so they've really got a great tiered menu of services, including production, printing. Like I said, they'll help you market the book and essentially act as an e-tailer. You know, you can keep it online. They'll go back to press and make sure the book is delivered. So I think it's a platform to keep an eye on. They're basically a hybrid crowdfunder that can act as a publisher, a distributor, or a retailer. So they really have added something new to the crowdfunding idea.
So, but you know, it does strike me that one of the reasons why Kickstarter is so successful is FOMO, you know, and like if you're not going to get your check please shirt. I mean, I think last week or, you know, last time we talked about how Check Please had this gigantic, you know, half a million dollar Kickstarter. But, you know, if you're not going to get your shirt, that's the impetus to like put it over the edge or to put your order in. Whereas if it's available perpetually, it does become more of just like pre-orders, I suppose. So you kind of, you know, then the motivation might not be there. But I understand that both of their first two projects were funded.
Yes. And they've launched with a number of projects by some very creditable, you know, professionals. I mean, David Finch and Ron Mars and you know, I can go down the list here. They've got quite a few. They've got a handful up there, and I believe what I think. Let me see. They had one thing up there already that was Slow City Blues, which when I wrote my piece had already raised about $8,000 of a $25,000 goal. Now I don't know if that's the one you're talking about. That
yes, I believe it's been completely funded. Got some PR about
correct.
That.
So I just think it's they've added a new wrinkle, a new services. You can decide how much services you want. Jordan also thinks it will take care of the problem I think you were talking about is of campaigns either being unable or unwilling to deliver on their promises. He expects to have an impact on that. Mm-hmm. And also just on the ability of creators to deliver more product.
Right.
If that's taken care of and part of the production fee that you pay, maybe, you can get out a larger scale of work. So we'll keep an eye on Zoot.
Yeah, absolutely. Even more news to publishing news to come. Like I said, everybody just send out their PR. Well, here's one that I just put up on the beat just a few hours ago, and I'm just going to briefly mention it because I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about this. It's a new company called Interpop, and they are launching a whole new comics universe called The Emergence. But they have a lot of top people involved. I know Jimmy Palmiotti is involved, J. Amanda Connor, and they have some other really big names that they haven't been announced yet.
Are they doing periodical comics? Or?
Well, what they're doing is they are doing digital comics, however, which will be free to read. However, you can buy them as NFTs. And now we don't like NFTs here, but I will say they are billed as the cleaner NFTs because there is, a lot of people are working on a different technology. So they're trying to work with this new cleaner technology. They're actually owned by a company that works with a certain kind of cryptocurrency that only runs on this cleaner technology. So, and they have a whole suite of games and collectible card games. They're trying to be everything. But obviously they have some funding. We'll be hearing, I just ran this story. We'll hear more from Interpop for sure. The comics will actually be free to read. Like that you could just go on them and read their comics on their website in their own proprietary reading platform that they have, and hopefully they want you to buy it as an NFT or to buy art or whatever. So that's where they're looking to monetize it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. And then let's see, we have even more. Well, we have TKO on our story list here, but they just announced more books, and Calvin is in love with their book. So TKO will be here.
Yes. I'm in love with one in particular, so you'll hear more about that.
We'll skip that for now because Calvin's going to talk about it all summer. But then another one, what was it, Kate? When did they all debut? 2019?
Yep.
Another class of 2019 was Bad Idea, which is run by Dinesh Shamdasani, formerly of Valiant. Anyway, they put out a PR that said, we're sorry, but we're ending. And now everybody knows it's just a PR stunt. And, apparently they're going to rebrand and come back as a different company. So, the same thing. But, they made a lot of headlines because they only distribute their comics to a limited number of comic shops. And if you put it on early, they'll shame you on social media and not sell you their books anymore. So,
and they don't collect into books. They don't do trade paperbacks. They don't do hardcovers.
Yeah. It's like they were trolling the collector mentality, to be honest. So I guess that worked for a couple of years, and now they're going to try something different.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I'm certainly curious about them, but they. Anyway, they create a spectacle. I'll leave it at that.
Exactly. Okay. And then now one final coming and going, just because there's been so many. This is all just in the last 2 weeks. And then at DC, they announced that Albert Ching would be moving up to director of marketing, which used to be Adam Phillips. So I think last time we mentioned that Spencer Simpson was going there to be director of sales. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you had a director of sales, you had a director of marketing, and then you laid off everybody, and now no one is selling your comics, so you hired some new people. All right, good going, DC. Good going.
Sounds like a good idea, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The comics industry will profit one way or another. It just may not be DC.
Yeah. Well, Kate, do you want to talk about the Fables?
Yes, and other DC news. Fables, the Vertigo comic about, fairy tale characters from the fairy tale world secretly infiltrating our own by Bill Willingham and Mark Buckingham, is returning. for a 12-issue sort of limited series. And also for a very special Batman crossover. Ah. Oh, God, no. So there are many, many good things about Bill Willingham's writing, but his ability, in my personal opinion, this is a personal opinion, his ability to write superheroes or lack thereof is not one of them. So I'm not sure why they're doing the kind of tacky Batman crossover that every comic they can get their hands on the rights does, but yeah, sure, man. Now Bill Willingham is a teensy bit controversial because he's definitely on the more conservative side for a comics writer, by which I do not mean wildly conservative for a human being living in America. Just, you know, he really, 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 really likes Israel, like, a lot, in a very, very specific way. Yeah, make of that what you will. And he definitely has a militaristic streak, which, again, make of that what you will. But the internet was perhaps a slightly less politicized place in the comics world back when Fables was in its original run. So here's hoping that the comic doesn't run face first into some internet backdraft.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a Twitter, like, I just thought it was super interesting because, you know, 20 years ago when Fables debuted, I mean, it was, you know, like, I mean, Bill Willingham had whatever politics he had, and they definitely bled over to the book a little bit, but it was sort of like, oh, but we love Big B. Wolf, you know, and a lot of people on Twitter now were saying, you know, I read this when I was a kid, but now I see through it, and, you know, I can't believe we ever told girls, you know, and they were like, you know, the Fables is a book that we recommended for female readers, even though it's, you know, pro-life or, you know, anti-abortion, more accurately, very strongly anti-abortion, like Snow White goes off on a whole talk about anti-abortion. So, you know, it's I was just like, yeah, it's not quite going to – and also Willingham wrote for Breitbart. Now, when he wrote for Breitbart, it was a little before
– it wasn't during that era of Breitbart.
Right. It was a little different when it launched, but, you know, it raised some eyebrows for sure. Yeah, but things are a lot different now if you have different
comics. So I guess we're going to find out. I mean, he was also had a notorious panel presence, wasn't it? With some obstructionist comments about women or women in comics, or
yeah, he had a very bad panel. You know,
yeah, it was an awful panel. But
whatever. Hey, look, I guess he'll be on Substack. Just watch. Yeah, Bill
right.
Willingham on Substack for sure.
No doubt. Look, I haven't read everything.
I don't know that he'll need
Fables.
It, but we'll see.
Yeah, I've read everything Fables, but you know, the one things I've read, I have liked. But hey. You know, it sort of doesn't surprise me that he's coming back. He certainly, the series certainly is popular, but it's really.
And you know, listen, I have I do think people should be held accountable for their actions, but I just, you know, I wrote an article about this, and I didn't say it should be canceled, and now there's all these YouTube videos saying how I need to be canceled, and you know, like we had to delete a ton of comments calling me horrible name, you know, Jane, you ignorant slut. But, you know, somebody on Twitter about Fables said, you know, can you believe that DC announced this in Pride Month? And I'm like, of all the things that we're talking about, Bill Willingham, you know, that has nothing to do, like, I mean, he's apparently not transphobic or, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I missed that. Maybe
there's I've read all of Fables, and maybe my memory's failing me, but as a gay reader, like, I was never offended in that way by anything that he wrote ever, and I have pretty good gay offense dar, so I don't know, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, but just, you know, hey, you know what, just to wrap it up, Bill Willingham, you're not gonna get off so easy writing for Breitbart anymore.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Be careful, dude. Be careful.
Yeah.
I would like to continue to read your comics, and I don't want you to do something that gets you on the end of an internet comment blunderbuss.
Yeah. Well, right. We'll see. Let me see. Is that all the news?
No.
Oh, no, we have more news.
We have Netflix Geek Week.
relentless this week. Yeah, so, Netflix Geek Week. What was that all about? Kate, you were reading about that.
Yeah, so Netflix, I guess, having realized that their constant barrage of announcements can kind of fade into the background unless they do something to have them stand out in the mind, decided that they would arrange them by theme. So recently we had Geeked Week. Yes, that's right, because Geek Week makes too much sense. Let's add an ED at the end, in which they announced geek-themed programming that they had coming up and gave details of geek-themed programming that they had already announced. And a great deal of this is, quite frankly, based on or related to comics or anime or manga properties. So, for example, you know, some of the things that got a spotlight during Geek Week were, you know, Umbrella Academy's next season, where, you know, they revealed the episode titles of the upcoming season. And, you know, obviously there will be an upcoming season. They won't go back on that. And they released Sleepers from Sweet Tooth based on that graphic novel series. And, you know, they announced the premiere month, not date, but month of the next season of Lock and Key. And they gave a cute little video promo of, the Cowboy Bebop live action series by having the actors be there in mostly full costume and like bopping their heads to the theme. Yeah. And they announced that the original composer, Yoko Kanno, of the really amazing soundtrack of the original Cowboy Bebop, will be joining the Netflix show to provide additional music, which is, you know, always great.
I want to see this.
Yeah, I'm on board. Or at the very least, I want to buy the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And, you know, they gave behind-the-scenes looks at the upcoming Sandman series, and, you know, just they had more Lucifer. They had so many things that are based on comics and anime properties.
Yeah. I didn't really, kind of geeked out. I didn't really cover this. I wasn't sure if it was a behind the scenes thing, but I guess it was kind of their little Comic-Con, really. You know,
kind of. It wasn't like organized like that or themed like that, but it's exactly the things they would have released at a Comic-Con.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They weren't really like doing the panel thing exactly, but they did. This is all the information that would have come out at San Diego 2021 in a normal year.
Right.
And so, yeah, they, you know, more Castlevania, but carefully tailored to be a quote-unquote different show in the same series, which gives them a workaround for why exactly they can have everything, all the staff be the same except for the glaring exception of Warren Ellis, whose reputation has been rather tarnished.
Is he on Supergirl?
No, he's canceled. Yeah, he's, you know what?
He's really canceled.
I'm surprised if he's coming back on Substack. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Castlevania spinoff is going to feature a different character from the long Castlevania saga, Richter Belmont. And it's set in 1792 France during French Revolution, and Netflix screwed up their own lore by saying that Richter was Sypha and Trevor, the main characters of the first series, he was their son, which led many fans to be like, but you make the show. Don't you know that that's 300 years in the future of the show? So, you know, I bet that was embarrassing for someone in Netflix PR. Moving on. And what makes all of this extra interesting is that, well, two things. One, that it actually did a really good job of cutting through the malaise of Another Week, Another Netflix series by bundling a lot of very similar stuff together to make for, you know, some excitement.
Yeah. No, this is pretty cool, actually.
But what's also interesting was something highlighted by Brian Ashcraft of Kotaku, which is that actually, despite all this anime, Netflix Japan, relatively speaking, is not doing as well as they might expect to in a culture that is relatively well off and very television centric and technology centric. So they actually they aren't in as many households by far by per capita as they are in the United States. Now, in the United States, 61% of American homes use two or more paid streaming services. And in America, like most of those homes, one of them is Netflix. But in Japan, reportedly, only 13% of Japanese homes with broadband have Netflix.
Wow.
So think of that what you will. So it's very interesting that they're doing well worldwide on manga-based content and syndicating anime already created in Japan as well. But they're having trouble cracking the actual Japanese market.
Well, but isn't that because, I mean, where does anime air in Japan?
Well, it airs on television, but it also does air on streaming services as well.
Yeah, but they probably, I mean, you know,
it's
they might have
to get your hands on.
Yeah, but I mean, they probably have their own, you know, there's a Netflix of Japan, maybe? I
guess.
Know.
But I mean, they have Funimation, right? Funimation and Crunchyroll must be part of their menu.
Yeah.
But I don't claim to know anything about the Japanese market. But I assume there must be Japanese streaming services that people just sort of default to because they're used to them.
Yeah, but I mean, worldwide, Netflix has done very, 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 very well in many non-English language markets. But, yeah, it could be that because Japan is sufficiently tech-forward, their own local players had enough time to get in on the ground floor, and their media companies might have been just tech-savvy enough to get their own streaming deals in place that Netflix didn't get as much of a foothold. But it's just interesting. It's just interesting that they are doing well exporting Japanese content and even causing Japanese and Japanese-related content to be created, but they are not actually doing as well in Japan, which does not mean they're not profitable. Well, it's just not as much.
Well, you know, I was reading the Kotaku story, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as though the TV networks in Japan have a model that it's kind of helps them because they sort of fund the production up front and then stream the shows for free or broadcast them for free. So Netflix may be competing with free.
Well,
when it comes to some anime anyway.
But that's not so very different from any regular television show in America. And yet we still watch an awful lot of Netflix.
True. Yeah, true. The streaming seems to be catching on. Everybody's got it.
Yeah.
Even if they're looking at broadcast.
I mean, my guess why Netflix doesn't do as well is like I said, that it's anime is everywhere. It's so soaked that it's not as special as it is here on Netflix. But, you know, they did, this isn't on Netflix, but Adult Swim, they did release a teeny tiny bit of the Junji Ito Uzumaki animation that's going to be on Adult Swim, and it looks amazing.
I mean, one thing I think over the time and from writing about manga and whatnot over the years, I think we have learned that you know, Japanese players sort of like to work with people they know. I mean, maybe you know, Netflix is just hasn't gotten cozy enough with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a lot of Publishers Weekly. I think I mentioned last time that I was toiling away on my library story and I was exhausted. I was spent. But anyway, it came out this week. I talked to a bunch of librarians, most of them on the graphic novel comics roundtable, and also talked to the Steve Potash, the CEO of Overdrive, which is a very prominent digital lending. We talk about all the issues of that. You know, and I tried to reach out to the folks at Hoopla, but they just never get back to me. But it seems it's because they were so busy talking to one of the writers at the Beat.
One of your other writers.
So by pure coincidence, but wonderful coincidence, Carrie Weinberg, who's been doing some really great writing, she has a huge story on Hoopla and libraries where she talks to publishers, librarians. Hoopla really covers how they deal with that. So I think between these two articles, you get a pretty, you know, if I do say so myself, you get a little snapshot of where we're at right now with libraries and graphic novels. Yeah. And short, too long, didn't read. People are still reading a lot of graphic novels.
Yeah. And I should say, Heidi, that your story also gives people a broad overview of what libraries are going through with comics as they come out from under lockdowns and limits on physical, you know, having people in their buildings. Dealing with the huge demand, digital demand for comics when you couldn't physically go into the library. So it's a really good look if you care about libraries, and who doesn't? And especially the growth of comics in libraries and the dedicated librarians who are really determined to make sure that the category is distributed far and wide in the library system. Go check it out. Publishersweekly.com/comics.
Yeah.
So, as many readers may know, Jujutsu Kaisen is one of the biggest, fastest rising shonen manga currently in print. It's huge. It battles with Demon Slayer for the top spot. But there has just been an announcement that the manga will be going on indefinite hiatus.
Indefinite. Oof.
Indefinite. So, Gege Akutami's health, he's the creator. Gege Akutami's health appears to be an issue. He didn't go into any detail, even though he's a relatively young person, that his health challenges are sufficient that he really doesn't think he can keep up a reliable schedule for a while. So even though he would have times that he could write and times when he couldn't, his publisher has encouraged him to take however much hiatus he needs to repair his health.
Wow.
So let's hope he's well and whatever is going on is resolved. But that's a big shocker for manga and anime fans because it's a relatively new series. He's relatively young and up and coming. This hiatus stuff usually comes in when creators have been around a little longer and maybe even beaten down a little more by the industry, to be frank.
Yeah.
He's riding high on the rise.
Well, so. I hope this is the beginning of a trend towards health for manga creators because it's a notoriously unhealthy lifestyle that has no sleep or time off. And even now, you know, you'd think in the modern times it would be different, but it's not. And, you know, for a young popular creator to just say, I need a break, that's wonderful, actually. And to get a break, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, Tezuka was only 60 years old when he died. Yeah. And there's a lot of other mangaka who have died very young. So.
I mean, my hope is that this is a sign that his editors are relatively enlightened and trying to keep promising talent healthy and not a sign that there's something very, very seriously wrong.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so.
I hear you.
So on arguably either lighter or heavier note, Dan Lee has been given his very own street in the Bronx.
There you go.
Named in his honor. So, you know. University Avenue between Brant Place and West 176th Street is now named after Stan Lee.
Yeah. Well, they should have named it after Jack Kirby, too. But
well, maybe Kirby will get his own street later.
Well, he should get a street down here on the Lower East Side.
So well, I know, but, you know.
If he doesn't have one, he certainly should.
Still working on that, you know. Let there be – there needs to be a chain, you know – we still need to work on getting Kirby some kind of recognition down the lower, he said, where he's born. So,
yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, good for Stan. You know, let's go to Stan Street. And yeah.
Sure.
One more note about the eternal question of what can you do about a problem like manga pirates? The Japanese government and publishers have found that their brilliant plan of taking down the pirated manga hub Manga Mura and, you know, bringing criminal charges against its owner, instead of stopping or slowing piracy, at least by correlation, appears to have accelerated it, as many, many competitors have seen that this is their big chance to be the next big dog in manga piracy. So manga piracy has gone through the roof.
Okay, well.
Piracy, it's like a hydra, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. Anyway, wow. I'm spent from all this news. Good God.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's more. I do think there's more to come.
I think
we're
right.
Just getting started. I just think, you know, here in New York anyway, and around the country in different places, I mean, you know, we're really coming out of lockdown and things are ramping up again. So
and let's remember,
we go.
We're in the midst of an explosion of sales in this category.
Yes. Yes.
Everywhere you look, people are really just hyped for more comics. So there's more to come.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Every area of the culture, almost.
Yes, and so on that note, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Please subscribe, please comment, please rate us, and remember, there will be
more
to
come.